Welcome to the Carry On Bags Only podcast. I'm your host, Kelsey, and on today's episode, we hit the slopes and hear from Mark Newton, a traveler and the senior manager of Para Alpine Domestic Programs and Pathways. He has a passion for travel and helping people and shares with us some of the unique obstacles para alpine athletes face when traveling. Mark also discusses the importance of understanding accessible travel and why you shouldn't let challenges hold you back from pursuing your travel dreams. Mark discovered unique ways to be able to see the world and offers advice to anyone looking for inspiration to get out of their comfort zone. So dust off your skis, grab your carry-on bags, and get ready for this action-packed episode. And remember, keep calm and carry on. Welcome, Mark, to the Carry On Bags Only podcast.
Thanks for having me.
You've had quite an extensive travel period. So I know you were mentioning we were trying to do this back in, I think, November, and you only had 2 days off season, which is insane.
Yeah, the nature of my work puts me in a position where I spend a lot of time on the road in the winters. So obviously, you know, for your audience who doesn't know me, my name is Mark Newton. I work for Alpine Canada. I work as the senior manager of Para Alpine Domestic Programs and Pathways. Essentially, a really complicated title to say that I run sport development for the Paralympic ski program all across Canada. So that involves a lot of domestic travel, working with grassroots organizations, doing talent ID, recruitment, that sort of thing. And then I also coach our next gen and our prospect teams, which takes me over to the other side of the world every now and again to do some racing in Europe and training in South America. As a, you know, kind of a quick rundown of what my season looked like last year. September, head down to Chile for about 3 weeks to train in the Southern Hemisphere. Spring down there as our fall. So it's one of the places that we can go in and get snow, then travel a lot more domestically during the season. Had a trip to Cortina in Italy last year to check out the venue for the next Olympics. And so wintertime is very busy for me, kind of just bouncing around. And currently in the summer, I'm actually in the process. I booked flights yesterday to head back down, fly into Santiago and go back up to El Colorado for 3 weeks in September. So I'll be in Chile in September again, probably Austria in December. And then I'll go back to Italy probably end of January for some more races.
That's insane. I haven't even done any international travel yet this year, and you've already have knocked so many places off the list in such a short period of time.
I'm very fortunate in that I get to see a lot of the world with what I do for work. It can be challenging for us because most of the ski circuit happens in Europe, which means we have to travel quite a bit. So it's challenging for our athletes and for our budgets and things like that. But the bonus side of it is we get to travel and we get to see some different parts of the world.
Yeah. So before we dive more into that, like, what was your history before that? So how did you, like, you traveled a ton before you got into this? Like, did that passion for travel lead into your work? What's kind of the history before? How did you get into travel initially?
Travel initially, I would have to say with my parents. My mom always had a camper van growing up. And when we were kids, we used to go out on the weekends and we would go camping and we would drive everywhere. I grew up in Invermere, BC. So in the heart of the Rocky Mountains, you know, super lucky to grow up in that area. My parents, they've always owned sort of outdoor tourism businesses and accommodation businesses and things like that. So we were very fortunate as kids to get to do a lot of traveling around Canada, which I think kind of sparked my desire to see different places. And then as soon as I was able to, I started to travel. I got a job partway through university with Princess Cruises and got to do a lot of traveling with them. So I always tried to find ways that I could travel and not have to pay for it, essentially. And the cruise ships worked out for that. So I did a number of contracts with them. Got to spend a couple months in Alaska, spent a few months in Europe going back and forth. I've been to the Caribbean 3 or 4 times, down on the Mexico side and that sort of thing as well. So I'm very fortunate that I've managed to kind of parlay work into travel a number of times, as well as traveling for fun outside of those times. So one of the things that happens when you do travel a lot for work is you end up with bigger blocks of time off later in the year, sort of, you know, time in lieu, which provides me more time to travel, which is great.
Yeah, I think you hit on a few points there that are worth mentioning, like, especially for people who are maybe
you know, wanting to get into travel or maybe just coming out of school in a similar situation as you, I think that's a really cool angle to know that if you want to travel and maybe you don't have the money to do it, looking into a job that allows you that ability to travel and work and see the world at the same time is like a really great opportunity. So that's awesome that you were able to jump on that.
Yeah, especially when you're young and you have the opportunity to do it. I mean, working on the cruise ships, for example, is a much different experience than it would be having a job almost anywhere else as far as living conditions and pay and that sort of thing. I did it while I was going to university. I went to Europe for 3 months in the summer and I didn't make a lot of money, but I didn't lose any money either. I spent 3 months in Europe and I came home with $1,000 in my pocket with all my bills paid throughout the whole summer. So, you know, I didn't make a huge amount of money, but I definitely got the opportunity to do some cool things that way. And it's a neat experience. And when you're young, I think there's a lot of education that happens within traveling and meeting different people that is just as valuable as what you're doing in school. And I would, you know, recommend people try to find ways to do it. And if you can be a little bit creative in the ways you travel by doing it with work or doing it with friends or some sort of cost sharing or actually find a way to get paid doing it, that's just an extra bonus because obviously travel is expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and like you said, the experiences that you gain from doing something like that, there's a ton of people that I've met, you know, through my career and we've had a lot of interns. And I remember chatting with a girl just recently and she was telling me, she's like, you know, I want to take the summer off to travel, but, you know, I don't know how my parents feel about it. And I said, I was like, you know, the way you got to look at it is the skills that you're going to get from that. Like, you're not going to have that same experience. Like, yes, if you go and jump into a job right away, like you can get money and you can gain experience that way. But there's something about travel, like the life experience you gain to your point of like just meeting with different people, the different challenges that you're faced with, different living conditions. I think it helps build you up as a person and you allowed yourself the ability to get out of your comfort zone and see what you like and what you don't like. And I really think that can shape a lot of people and set them up for success later in life.
Absolutely. And there's something about putting yourself out there and putting yourself in a situation where you're uncomfortable, especially if you end up somewhere where you don't speak the language and things like that. You develop a skill set of how to communicate with people. And that skill set is transferable to anything you possibly do.
Yeah. Do you have any crazy travel stories from when you working on the cruise ship? Like I always joke that I missed the boat literally because I started watching Below Deck and I was like, man, like I kind of regret that I didn't go and work on a boat or a cruise ship or a yacht. And I started watching the show and I was like, man, if I could go back, I would totally go back and work on a yacht or something just to see what it was all about. But I can't imagine what it's like on a cruise ship.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. I actually know a couple of people who have done, like, who still work on chartered yachts and that sort of thing. And I imagine if you were to talk to them, their experiences would be much different than mine as on the cruise ship. I got pretty lucky on the cruise ship. So I worked with the kids on board. So I've always worked with kids. I've always been a coach and that sort of thing. So I worked primarily in the teen center when I was on the cruise ship. So I basically travel around and I was a glorified babysitter and I beat kids at Mario Kart and stopped them from making out while we were on trips. That was pretty much my job, which is awesome. It was easy and it was great. You know, not too many crazy stories. You work a lot when you're on the ships, but you have a lot of fun too, right? There's some decks within the cruise ship that people don't necessarily know about where only the crew can go. And there's a crew specific bar, crew specific eating areas, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Because there's a number of people who work on the cruise ships who you won't see in the passenger areas. And they'll be on the ship for kind of 8 months at a time. And they stay mostly below deck. And it's a different experience. People from different countries and backgrounds get treated very differently on the cruise ships. At least they did while I was there, you know, which can be a challenging thing to be a part of. I was super fortunate on the ships. They did something called you could be an escort for the tours. So when you're on the cruise ships, they run these tours every day for the guests that are on the ship. Okay. As a part of our role is we could sign up essentially to audit the trips. So we go in and review them from a passenger standpoint to see how they're going.
That's kind of cool.
So that was pretty neat. I had a couple of really good trips doing that. You know, I got to see humpback whales, bubble feed a couple of times, which was really neat. I've watched grizzly bears feed off of salmon ladders in Alaska from, you know, your 30, 40 feet away from a 700-800 pound bear, which is pretty crazy. Probably some of the most fun I've had is in the tour operators in the Caribbean. When they find out that you work with the ship, they tend to treat you a little bit better. And, you know, a lot of 9 a.m. rum punches and turtle snorkeling and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I was fortunate for one of my roles. I was able to travel and we had to go on excursions with some of the guests to make sure that they had a good experience. And it was really fun because to your point, it's like you got to do things that you wouldn't normally do. Like I'm one of those people that if I go on trips, I'm not usually paying to go on some of the different excursions because they're usually pretty expensive. But I was able to go on, like, I think I got to go on one pretty much every single day. So I was down in Cabo and got to do like the whale watching and like there was like snorkeling, but it was just super fun because it's like, when am I ever going to be doing anything like this? And I remember a couple of people didn't want to sign up for some of the excursions and I just like kept putting my hand up. I was like, I'll go do that. So it was cool. You know, it gives you that perspective and you see different sides of life that you might not always be exposed to. And I think it gives you a different appreciation for, you know, maybe you're where you are from or how things are in different places. So I think, you know, that's really cool. I'm glad that you shared that side of what you got to see because I had no idea that you got to do all these things and I've known you for a couple of years too.
Well, it's cool too, because, you know, specifically with the cruise ship stuff, when you got to go out and be sort of the escort on the tour, is you actually get to meet some of the local population where you are and see what life is like from their perspective, but actually see what the cruise ships do from their perspective too, as far as feeding the economy goes. I was always really torn working on the cruise ships because, you know, you're on a little bit of an environmental death machine when you're out there traveling around. I mean, I don't think anybody would argue that cruising is the greenest activity that you could possibly do.
Yeah.
But you see these little towns and people who run businesses and they make their living based on the cruise ships coming in all the time. And if you're in, you know, some of these smaller Caribbean islands, somewhere like Honduras or something like that, like there is a poor population and there isn't a lot of work and they rely so heavily on tourism that it's neat when you talk to people and you find out that they're not bothered by the fact that the ships are there, that they actually really appreciate the fact that the ships are there.
Yeah, no, I think that as long as people are, you know, they do their background and looking into stuff before they go, because to your point, yes, like cruising, definitely there's a dark side to it. But I think there's a way that if you are going to do it, understanding, like, you know, supporting the locals, because a lot of the times, a lot of the money that's generated doesn't always go back into the communities. And I think there's definitely ways to look at, if you are traveling, how can I, you know, support local communities in a way that I can still travel and feel okay about it. So I think it's just about, you know, educating yourselves. And that's one of the things too, with this podcast, when I wanted to, you know, go into talking about travel, I had this guilt as well. And I really wanted to break that stigma and show to people that, hey, you can still go and travel. And there's a way that you can go about it where, you know, you can be a little bit more mindful when you do your travels. And I think that's the thing that I want to show people, is that it's not an all or nothing thing. Like, you know, you just got to start small. And I think it's just these little baby steps. And the more that we just, you know, lean into that, I think the more we'll be able to kind of change how travel is and hopefully shift some of that negative perspectives that happen. And I do see a lot more people being more mindful of it, which is really great to see.
Yeah, totally. And I think, you know, ecotourism has become much more popular over the years as well. Like there are a lot more of these, you know, new greener places and new initiatives that you can take on. And especially when you head to places like South America, if you're in Costa Rica or Nicaragua, there's all kinds of these, you know, green resorts or ecotourism resorts that you can go to. And a lot of them have even, you know, work projects where you can go for a day and you can volunteer to help some of the locals out with whatever it happens to be, you know, building houses or moving rice or doing something. But there's lots of ways to go and be involved. And there's lots of ways to support the local community when you're traveling, just by the choices you make too, right? You can go somewhere and you can choose to eat. I'm trying to think of a good example. I was in Bali and they have a Hard Rock Hotel. And we were talking about going to the Hard Rock Hotel for dinner. And we went, well, why would we go to the Hard Rock Hotel for dinner? We can go down the street and find somebody who has this tiny little cart on the side of the road where they're maybe making some food and a little hole in the wall place where you're going to get way better meals. You're going to have a way cooler sort of cultural experience, and you're not just supporting a giant chain restaurant, you know, and I'm not, I don't think there's anything wrong with the hard rock by any means. I'm not trying to single it out. It's just the first thing that came to mind, because I remember landing in Bali and seeing a certain amount of chain restaurants and things like that and going, oh, well, that's cool. But I think there's other places that we could go.
It's one of those things when you're away, it's sometimes you want to gravitate to the comforts of things that you know, but then you have to stop and be like, wait, I have this at home. This is the time to experience something different. So I'm so happy to hear that you leaned into that.
Yeah, that's something, if traveling, especially with eating, I like street food, though. I'm very lucky that, you know, I have a fairly strong stomach, I think, knock on wood, for the amount of times I've traveled, that, you know, I like getting corn on the cob that's cooked on the back of somebody's motorcycle on the street, or buying, you know, pad thai underneath an overpass in Bangkok somewhere. Like, those are the experiences that I think are cool.
Yeah.
And I like that kind of food. It's definitely not for everybody. Not everybody can eat that way. But when you have the chance to, specifically for food options, eating locally and trying to eat with family-run restaurants or organizations as best you can, or local restaurants anyway, staying away from the brand names.
Yeah. And one of the things that I was going to ask about too is just the logistics of traveling, leading back to your job that you do now. I'm imagining there's a lot of challenges that you must run into as far as accessibility goes, and, you know, being able to accommodate a large group of people, because obviously, you know, not everyone has stomachs of steel. And so you have to kind of be able to accommodate large groups. So what kind of challenges have you ran into with some of the travels that you've done for work?
So traveling for work. So I travel with a number of para athletes. So I travel with athletes who have physical disabilities. So we travel with visually impaired or blind athletes. We travel with athletes who may have an amputation of some sort. We travel with athletes who are in wheelchairs. Athletes who are in wheelchairs, or people who are in wheelchairs, obviously are going to run into the most sort of problems when you start to travel, because the world is getting more accessible, but it's not. The reality is it just isn't accessible, and you have to kind of work around that as best you can. The big thing, if you're trying to do any sort of accessible travel, is I think there's two big things you need to know. One is the needs of your athlete, and not the needs of your athlete based on, okay, they're in a wheelchair, so they need this, this, and this, but you need to know the individual needs of your athletes, because sometimes you have athletes that are in a wheelchair, but they can walk on crutches, say. So that athlete might be able to use a non-accessible room that you can book, but an athlete who has paralysis needs a different type of accessible room. So for me, I think one of the biggest learning curves for me is accessible doesn't mean the same thing for all people. And it's very much that person in that place, and what does accessibility look like? And sometimes you do everything you possibly can beforehand, and then you arrive and it's not what you thought it was, because people have different views of accessibility. And then it's just, okay, how do I work with our service provider to make things more accessible? Or how do we pivot and find something new to do for these athletes? For the most part, we travel to Europe, and things in Europe are pretty good as far as accessibility goes, in stores and in, you know, transportation, stuff like that. Easy to find vans and things that work. The hard part becomes when we get to ski hills, and sometimes the rooms aren't necessarily as accessible as you would like them to be, or they're smaller than you would like them to be, and wheelchairs don't fit, or, okay, the washroom works, but I can't shut the door when I'm in there. So that still works for you, but you can't have a roommate because now there's lack of privacy. It's just really doing as much research as you can before you arrive, and then going in with a mindset of it could all be fucked. It could be not the way that we think it is at all, and we're going to have to pivot and we're going to have to deal with it. And you just have to know that going in.
Yeah. Right?
It's just a part of managing expectations.
Yeah, I think that requires a lot of patience. I've heard stories previously, and I know I had my first kind of interaction with accessibility challenges last summer when I volunteered for a sporting event. And I was honestly really shocked at how inaccessible they made it for athletes. And I ran into a situation with a visually impaired athlete who wasn't being accommodated. And it honestly threw me for a loop. Like, I felt so sick to my stomach that they weren't allowing this individual to drop their stuff off the day of, like they were forcing them to check their stuff in. And I just remember, you know, writing on the bag, you know, trying to find somebody at this event to say, hey, here's the situation. And it just seemed like nobody had like an answer. It was kind of like, well, we'll try to see if we can get the bag off first. But this poor guy had to leave the venue and he had nothing. Like he didn't have his glasses. He didn't have his, you know, aids or anything. And it just made me feel so sick to my stomach that after I went on the website to look, like I found anything that I could like to see if they had, you know, anything listed on the website, I ended up writing to them. And I was just like, you know, if I can offer any points for future, like you really need to have, you know, this more accessible really like on your website. Like I was looking everywhere and there was nothing there. And that was my first taste of it. And then as I got to know you and your traveling, I was just like, man, like Mark is in this like 24/7, like he's around this kind of stuff all the time. And just, you know, hearing you chat about it and your outlook on it is so positive. And it's, I really appreciate that. And I think that's something that I really respect about your role and how you go approach situations. It's really nice to know that you have that lens. And I'm thinking that it's, you know, kind of filtering out to other people as they learn more about like what you do and, you know, working with the athletes.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously try my best. I'm not perfect by any means. And I'm somebody who has a lived experience as far as I've traveled a lot with athletes with a disability. I don't have the lived experience of being an athlete traveling or a person traveling who has a disability. And I think those two things are, you know, vastly different. And I can't speak for what other people encounter. I can only speak for the things that I've seen. And, you know, as an able-bodied person, the big thing that I've learned as far as all that stuff goes is you just have to be open and ready to change and to pivot and to be flexible as much as you possibly can, right? And just to understand that because something is written a certain way doesn't mean that's the way that it's going to be. You know, I live in a world, in a sport that's controlled by weather, and you get very good at being like, okay, these are the variables we can control and these are the variables we can't control. And as long as we always focus on the variables we can control, we can always find success within any sort of a situation, whether it happens to be a weather delay or whether it's showing up at a hotel and finding out that things aren't accessible. Okay, we can sit here and we can be as angry as we want about it. And there should be systematic changes that happen. And I think it's great, like your example of going through that experience at the event and then being able to provide some feedback for them so that they can do better in the future. I think that piece of it is incredibly important. But there also needs to be a piece of, okay, well, I'm here and I'm ready to do something now. And what can be done? What actions can be taken in the moment to make this better? Because sometimes, and again, speaking from my experience, not from somebody on the other side, but your willingness to help and to accommodate means almost as much, if not more, than just having, you know, an accessibility, let's call it a ramp that goes into your building, right? You can have a ramp that goes into your building, but if you still don't treat people the way that they're supposed to be treated, you're still not being accessible. And you can not have a ramp in front of your building, and you can bend over backwards to put one up temporarily, and you can make sure that washrooms work, and there's all these other things that you can do to show that you're really making an effort. And I think as long as we all kind of get to that place where we're making an effort, that's the most helpful we can be, if that makes sense.
No, for
kind
sure.
of going on tangents, but that's the way I talk.
Yeah, no, no, it's good. I really appreciate you going into detail about it though, because again, I think it's something that, you know, we don't often think about, but that is the reality of some people's livelihoods, you know, when they travel. And I think the most wonderful thing is that with what you're doing, it's allowing that accessibility for more athletes to get into, you know, the sport and getting into travel, not being limited in saying, oh, well, I can't go and do these things. And I think for you to say like, hey, like challenge the status quo, you know, just because it's written a certain way doesn't mean that's how it should be. And I think if people can have that mindset, I think it's just going to make things better and make things even more accessible, because people for the most part are willing to be better. And I think it's all about how you approach it. And I think if you can go at it from a positive outlook and, you know, not come in too emotional, I think then people will be willing to open up and work with you on that. So I'm glad to hear that that's your approach, that you have a very positive outlook when going into situations like that.
Yeah, it's something, I mean, we talk a lot about what we call a growth mindset, and I think that's what it is, right? And we're really fortunate that we get to work with athletes in this capacity, and we get to be with them while they do some traveling that we can help facilitate too, which gives them some more skills to go out and do it on their own. Yeah. And they learn some of the questions that maybe they should be asking or the people that they should be talking to. You know, you're providing other skills that are really going to benefit somebody in the long term of their life by helping them learn to navigate these areas that they're going to continue to have challenges with forever. I think it would be great if the world could be accessible, completely accessible tomorrow.
Yeah.
But I don't think that that's a reality. And you kind of have two options. You can sit around and you can wait for it to be accessible, or you can understand that it's a work in progress and you can help with the work that's being done, and you can find ways to overcome and adapt as you need to along the way until those formal structures are put in place.
For sure. Well, one thing that I wanted to call out was a project that you were a part of, which is the Carving the Future video that was out on YouTube. And there was a couple stats from it, and I thought it was interesting. So one of them was 1 in 5 Canadians ages 15 years and over, or about 6.2 million individuals, reported having one or more disabilities. And it's crazy to me because as I was watching the video and just seeing, you know, people that maybe wouldn't have entered into the sport, and just seeing that they saw other people do it was the encouragement that they needed to go and do it. And just knowing how many people can be impacted that could potentially hold themselves back from having an experience, you know, like the athletes get to do with traveling and being part of a sport. It was really eye-opening for me to realize, because that's a huge number.
Yeah, well, people just don't know what they don't know. It doesn't matter if you're a person with a disability or a person without a disability, you know, and as soon as you see somebody else doing it, then you know it can be done. It's the Roger Bannister was the first guy to run the 4-minute mile. And when he ran the 4-minute mile, then a whole slew of people came in right after and did it. So if you have a couple people out there showing that it's possible, then everybody else realizes they can do it.
Yeah.
You know, the numbers that you're talking about, I want to say that's a StatsCan 2017. It works out to about 1 in 6 Canadians identifies as having a disability of some sort. So it is, it's a massive part of the population. And if you look on the global scale, or if you were to look at the American population, you know, those numbers might even be higher. So I think the world is going the route of accessibility. It's just not there yet. And it'll take time.
What's been one of the most rewarding parts of what you do?
Oh, that's a big question. I mean, anybody that I get to work with and I can help them accomplish a goal that they're looking to do, that's huge. I got involved with skiing and sport because I love skiing and I love sports. And I like the idea of people going out, getting outside of their comfort zone and trying to accomplish something new, accomplish a goal, you know, develop a new skill set. And anytime you can be a part of that sort of pathway for somebody, I find that to be very rewarding. You know, I've been really fortunate to have a couple of athletes that I've worked with who I met really young, and they've gone on to compete in things like the Paralympics, which of course as a coach is a huge dream to get to watch that happen. But I've also seen athletes that work with our grassroots organizations who didn't know that they would ever get to be independent on a ski hill again and go on a ski trip with their family. And I think that piece of it is equally as important. I like people, I guess, is the answer. And I'm very fortunate that I get to work with people in a capacity where I get to help them grow their lives, you know, whether they're moving towards a Paralympic goal or working towards something else. Just to be a part of that and have a positive impact on people's lives is fantastic. I had really good coaches and really good teachers growing up that had impacts on me, and I'm happy that I get to do that for other people.
Yeah, of course. And it's crazy too, because before we jumped on to record this episode, we were just kind of chatting about life stuff. And one of the things that I just recently did was I just quit a job. I was not feeling fulfilled with it. And I had to really sit back and get, you know, what is my purpose? What are the things that I value in life? I realized that I really like helping people, to your point too. And I'm going to go back to school for coaching because I really want to help other people in their journeys in whatever capacity it's been. And employee experience and ensuring people are happy has been such a huge part of my life. And I'm like, how can I build off of that? Like, how can I take this to the next level And I think everything happens for a reason. And I think with getting into the podcasting and interviewing people like yourself, that to me is like super rewarding to be able to hear stories of what inspires other people, and hearing the things that you've done just like makes me want to go out and travel even more and makes me want to work with people. You know, it's so easy to like focus on the negative side of life, but there is so much potential. There's a lot of self-sabotage that happens. I do it to myself a lot. Sometimes you need those perspectives and those stories to be able to be like, you know what? If this person can do it, I can do it. And I think it, again, really just shifts your mindset in certain situations where you might maybe feel sorry for yourself or think that you can't do something. I think we need to share more of these stories so that we can encourage other people who are feeling the same way. Like, hey, it can be done. Don't let your mindset hold you back.
Totally. I think perspective is one of the most important things that we can look for. To kind of bring it all back to travel, I think traveling provides an unbelievable amount of perspective, and you get thrown into it immediately. You know, you're kind of not in your comfortable little bubble that you're in at home. I guess I should say that with the caveat of it depends what kind of traveling you're doing.
True.
If you're just going and you're staying at all-inclusive resorts and stuff like that, you may not get the same kind of perspective that you're looking for. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Lindy, my wife and I went down to Mexico last year and did all inclusive for a week. And it was perfect holiday for what we needed at the time to just sit on the beach and relax. To me, I wouldn't necessarily call that kind of traveling. I know that doesn't make any sense, but there's just different elements to it, right? I've kind of in one spot, staying somewhere the whole time, not really getting to know the local people at all versus showing up somewhere with a backpack and no plan. Spending somewhere different every night and meeting people. It's just different.
Yeah. Well, and a huge shout out to Lindy. She's done some crazy travel too. And she's really inspired me. We've done a couple different travels together. And the thing I like about Lindy is that she finds things like bands. And she's like, Kels, this band is playing in this city. How can we build a trip around it? And it just makes it so fun, like having that to look forward to. And it's, to your point, like there's, I think, a time and a place for different types of vacations. And it's really as an individual, it's up to you what you want, but it's really cool that you're able to tailor a trip to your likes. And, you know, we've done some travels together, me and Lindy, and I've done stuff on my own, but seeing her go after certain trips inspires me to like, hey, I want to go and check out this band. And I've done some stuff on my own too, but she's been really inspiring for me to like get out there and try different things too.
Yeah, she's got the bug as well. That's for sure. She wants to get away and do lots of things. And it's, it's as much as we can do, we will try to do. And we're always planning. We've got lots of things in the works. We had to cancel some trips before the pandemic, unfortunately, or when COVID-19 happened, which was too bad. We had a trip planned to Costa Rica, Nicaragua that we had to postpone and haven't had a chance to go back and do that yet. But it is, it's still on the list. I know we'd really like to go to Bali at some point as well, kind of everywhere, to be honest. We just like to go. But what you said too, I think is cool about travel. And one of the things that Lindy did, and I know other people do, is building travel around events is a neat thing to do.
Yeah.
For lots of people, that'll be concerts and things like that. If you're, if you're not somebody who wants to go and party a bunch, I think it's cool. Lots of people travel and do, they'll go to Hawaii and do the Tough Mudder and do runs or sporting events, stuff like that. I think it's a really cool way to go and interact with the environment that you're in a way that you know you're going to enjoy. And events tend to be a fairly safe atmosphere to go and be involved with. And you're going to meet a bunch of people too.
Yeah.
Because one of the cool things about traveling is the people you meet and the plans that end up happening out of nowhere. Somebody gives you a little tidbit of advice on something that they saw the day before and you get to go and see it. People are your greatest resource when it comes to travel as well.
Oh, totally. Yeah. No, and I agree. Like I've done a couple of races, I've realized that I'm not huge into all-inclusives anymore. And for me, what I really enjoy is having a goal to work towards, sort of some form of physical activity, and then being able to relax after, because I've been always trying to get people to come with me and they're like, no, that's not for me, but I'll come meet you after. So it's cool because I'm like, okay, I can still do this trip for myself and then meet up with my friends after and, celebrate and do things together. So you can have a bit of both. So you can really make the trip what you want. You don't always have to do what other people want to do. You can find that balance, which is nice.
Totally.
Okay. So one of the things that I like to do with my guests is rapid fire travel questions. So
okay,
I was going to ask you some questions. Have you ever traveled with carry-on bags only?
Yes. And I will do that at every chance I possibly can. For work in the winter, we travel with a lot of gear. Yes. So when I'm traveling in the wintertime, I generally have a big duffel bag, a ski bag, at least one other bag, and, you know, possibly something else. So last year when we flew to Chile, there was three of us who flew down and we flew with 14 bags.
Holy.
Which is not fun at all.
Yeah.
So we travel with a lot of gear when we travel, just based on the nature of the sport. So yeah, whenever I'm traveling for fun, if I can fit everything in my backpack and I don't have to put anything checked, absolutely, it's the way to go.
Nice.
When I went to Thailand when I was in university, I remember my dad told me, he's like, I'll give you $200 if you just get on the plane with nothing but the cash in your pocket. And I didn't do it. And I highly regret not doing it because I think that it would be a cool thing to do, to just get on, go. And usually if you pack more than your carry-on, you're going to take way more crap than you need anyway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we talk about that all the time. Like, I put a poll out on Instagram and asked people if they're underpackers or overpackers. And I think, I can't remember the stat, it was like 80% of people were like, no, I overpack. Like, and everyone's like, I pack way too much underwear. And so it's kind of a funny joke because it's true. Like, I think we all do that. But then it's like, okay, do I really need 20 pairs of underwear for like a 2-day weekend trip? So it happens. Okay, next question is, do you recline your seat on an airplane?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Who doesn't recline their seat in an airplane?
This is a controversial question. It's gone both ways. Okay.
Unless I have a seat that won't recline for some reason, it's going back. Absolutely.
If somebody else reclines their seat in front of you?
No, they bought their seat. That's their right. If they're going to try to have a little nap, I'm going to do the same thing. So, you know, you got to have some give and take on the plane. I think it's not a comfortable environment for anybody.
Yeah.
But yes, absolutely. I'm going to recline my seat.
And what's like the one thing that we would find packed in your carry-on bag that's like you won't leave without it?
Headphones, yeah. Probably. Yeah. I mean, something to keep you entertained on the plane, music, books, stuff like that.
It's good. And I guess we kind of talked about it, but where are you going to travel to next? Like, what's your for personal?
Well, Lindy and I are going out to New Brunswick at the end of the month. Lindy's from New Brunswick. Lindy is my wife, for your listeners, who happens to be one of Kelsey's best friends, in case people don't know that.
Yeah.
We're headed out to New Brunswick at the end of the month. So I have not been there since I was very, very little. It's the first time Lindy and I have had a chance to go back together. So we're really looking forward to going out there and doing a few things. It'll be more family oriented, but we'll do that one. And then, like I said before, yeah, I'm headed to Chile in the fall. And then Lindy and I are hoping to maybe get away and do something in October. We're headed out your way. We have a wedding to go to in Victoria at the end of September as well. So there's a few things on the radar still.
Yeah, because I know that I was actually aiming to come to Calgary for one of the runs that was happening there because Lindy was going to do it with me. And then
that's right.
The wedding's coming up, but I'm not going to end up doing the run in Calgary anyways. So.
Oh, you're not going to do it anymore.
No, it just with the timing of it, it didn't quite work out, but I do this run. So it's called WAR. It's the World's Airline Road Race. And each year all the airlines come together and they pick a different destination around the world. So my family started doing it and I was jealous and wanted to get on board with it. And so I started doing it. I've gone to some pretty cool places. I went to Singapore, I went to Amsterdam. I was just recently in Hawaii. They were debating on whether this race was going to, I think the two places were Halifax or Calgary. And I was really hoping Halifax because I actually sadly have not been past, I think Montreal is the furthest east in Canada that I've been. So I've never been to New Brunswick or any of those places. And I really would love to go. So I was hoping it would be there and it wasn't. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe it could be a last minute I might go, but if I do, I'll obviously, well, you guys won't be there, but you know, either way, I'll let you know if I
can come stay at our house anyway.
There we go. Perfect.
Yeah. It would have been cool. I know we wanted to do it, but maybe next time. Maybe it'll go somewhere like Hawaii again, and then that'd be better than being in Calgary anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And no, like I love Calgary. It's a great city. And I think it's a cool spot for people to go in and check it out for running. And running is one of those cool things that I was chatting about with somebody the other day. You get to see a city in a different light because they shut down some of the parts that are, you know, normally for driving. And so you get to run on these roads and it's kind of cool because it's like empty and you get to see, you know, parts of the city. So who knows, maybe I'll still end up going, but I do encourage people to check it out because it's one cool way to see a city.
People who enjoy running, I've been on and off with running a little bit in my life just because I got bad knees, and, you know, it's running, but with travel in particular and running, there's something about getting out and going for a run somewhere that you've never been, where you just get to see so much more than you ever would, or, you know, beating jet lag by going for a run on the beach at 5 a.m. somewhere. Like, I think running is a really, really neat way to just go out and be a part of the environment that you're in when you're traveling.
Yeah.
You know, riding a bike, doing something active, but any sort of time when you're traveling, you have the ability to go out and be self-propelled in the environment that you're in, I find to be very rewarding. And I think it's a really good way to interact with the places that you're visiting.
Oh yeah. It's honestly, it's one of the things that I never thought I would get into. And it's something that I really enjoy. And it's kind of like, I think it's like type two fun. So it's like, yeah, when you're doing it, you're kind of like, oh, but then after, it's so rewarding. And I think that keeps me going. And for me, if I have that goal to work towards, one of the goals that I have that I've, you know, I made this goal prior to COVID and then I haven't really done anything with it, but I'm hoping to change that this year, is running the 7 continents. And there's what's called the 7 continents club that you can join. And you basically, it's choose your own adventure. You can choose different spots in the world that you'd want to run in, and they have the race rosters and everything listed on their website. So you can kind of choose and figure out where you want to go. And once you've ran your 7 continents, you can submit all of that information to them and they'll give you a medal to say that you've completed.
Oh, you know, that's cool.
Yeah. Whether it's a half marathon or a full marathon, you can choose. You have to stick with it. You can't do both. So you'd have to, if you sign up for a half marathon, you have to stick with the half or with the full, but it's amazing. And they're, I think, a tour operator as well. So you can book your travel through them. They also, there's some of the races around the world, you have to qualify or you have to have kind of an in, so they are able to help you with that. So there's a lot of benefits for signing up with it for sure. So I'm hoping to take advantage of that as well and knock one of the continents off the list, hopefully next year.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. So I'll let you guys know, because maybe you can come meet up with me.
Absolutely. I mean, we're always looking for stuff to do, and it's always fun to have people to travel with too.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much, Mark, for joining me today and talking a little bit more about your travel history. It's really cool, because like, this is stuff that we don't normally talk about, but I've heard little, you know, things from Lindy about your travels. And I was like, you know what, I got to get Mark on to talk about it, because just hearing just your mindset in general is just really inspiring. And it's just really cool to hear some of the travels that you've done previously and, you know, what you're going to be doing in the future too.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. It's always fun to come on and chat. And it's very much a brief overview of a few of the things that I've done. Like I said, at the start of the podcast, I'm really fortunate that I've been able to find ways to travel a lot in my life. So I've got a few nuggets of wisdom that exist from throughout those travels, and always happy to share them, and, you know, happy to help. Yeah, just talk about travel, because I think it's such an important thing for people to do and go be a part of. And especially now that the world is kind of opening back up again, it was weird there for a little while when we couldn't go and do things. So take advantage of it while you have the chance, because, you know, chances are we'll end up in a similar situation again. I don't think it'll be forever, but it'll probably happen again at some point. So get out there and enjoy it while you have a chance, or, you know, while you're young or you have the time or the money. I don't think there's ever a bad time to travel. I think you can always learn, you know, learn something useful from doing it.
Yeah. And maybe someone will challenge and take $200 and just roll onto an airplane. And
maybe if you're lucky.
We want to hear about it. You have to, yeah, they'll have to message us if they do it. So
yeah, cool. Well, maybe next time I'll give it a go.
Yeah. If you do, let me know. We'll do like a podcast round two and chat about it.
Maybe I can get Lindy on board to get on a plane with no bags and see what happens.
Yeah. We could do a carry on bags only challenge.
That would be exciting.
Yeah. I love it. Well, thanks again, Mark.
No problem.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Carry On Bags Only podcast. If you haven't already, hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Until next time, keep calm and carry on.